telling me that the journaling's been going well, some of the exercises have been going well, or you're struggling with them, but the struggle is good. So hopefully all of you are benefiting from this Thrive experience. And just before we start into Ecclesiastes chapter 11 this morning, let's just stop, if you would, and take a moment of silence. And if you'd offer up a prayer, because not everyone in the world is thriving right now. Would you agree? There are some African-American brothers and sisters of mine who are terrified living in this world. There are some friends of mine who are cops who are terrified living in this world. There are some friends of mine who serve in the Middle East who are terrified this morning. And I could go on with the list, but I think you can add to it. Could we just bow our heads for a moment and offer up a prayer that the Prince of Peace will somehow rule this year globally in people's hearts who are not thriving right now? Take a moment and lift up a prayer in your way. Lord, sometimes we look out and all around us, there's frustration, there's pain, there's darkness, there's hurt, there's evil, there's sin, but your word says that you are the light and the darkness cannot overcome you. I pray that by the power of your Spirit, you work healing and hope in places where I have no idea what to do. I pray that you work peace and joy into people's lives this Christmas. I pray that you help us continue on our journey to thrive, because it won't do anyone any good. If we are not thriving, we can't help. So thank you for the privilege of taking this couple hours out of our Tuesday morning to grow closer to you and to be built up by you so that we might serve your purposes in this world. In Jesus' name, amen. So I thought I would start with just a couple of questions that you can ponder, because we are 10 weeks in. This is the 11th week, and the theme is thrive. This is not just about walking out saying, I learned a bunch of cool stuff up here. This is about learning some cool stuff that we take seriously into our lives. Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. So to thrive is to live a whole, complete life. So here are some things that I get stuck on, and maybe they'll be helpful for you. What one fear holds you back from stepping out into whatever God has nudged you to do through this series? What whisper have you heard going through this Thrive class? Maybe it's on the days when you're supposed to be doing self-care, and you tried for a week, you tried for 2 weeks, and then you said, I'm just not going to pay attention to that because I have a to-do list that's too busy. What about this? What are you getting tired of in your life? Are there some things that are holding you back, holding me back, that maybe now's the time to just say, I'm tired of that. I'm going to let that go. I need the wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, to take this burden away. But you really haven't pursued him and asked. Who or who do you turn to when you need good advice? Solomon said, remember, that friends matter. Even for a king, friends matter. So hopefully through this series you've learned that you need to have wisdom, but sometimes wisdom comes from those closest to us, so that we need to seek out people who we know and love and trust, who have our best interests at heart, who can speak truth into our lives. Right now, what are you waiting and hoping for? Advent is all about hoping. It's all about waiting. It's about waiting on God to fulfill his promises. It's about waiting for God to send the Savior. So what are you waiting for? What are you hoping for? Are you invested in it? Are you praying for it? Are you longing for it? Is it something that you hold close? What is your purpose? If you don't have some sense of what God's purpose for you in your life is, it's really easy to get distracted by all the shiny things that call to us, all the distractions. So So what is God's purpose for you during this season of your life? And then where do you find strength? When you are halfway through the Thrive project and it gets tough and you're frustrated and you just want to quit, where do you find strength? Where do you find hope? What infuses you with joy? Because in another week, we're going to finish this series, but I hope that means you don't finish thriving. I want to thrive for the rest of my life, and I want that for all of you as well. So hopefully these questions are just some things that you can ponder as you journal or pray or spend your quiet time with God. And then now let's jump into what Solomon has to say, because these questions point us back to wisdom. What has wisdom taught us about how to answer those questions in our lives? We're at Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And the opening verses of chapter 11 are some of the more well-known verses. Chapter 3 is probably the most well-known. There's a season for everything under the sun. But these first few words of the poem in the first three verses are pretty well-known. Let me jump into Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all, but let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. And one of my favorites, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. And let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. So that was the English Standard Version. Let me read it to you now from the NIV, because I think you'll see some differences in the translation. And you'll see that this is one of the hardest chapters in the Hebrew Bible to translate because each word is a picture. And we're not always sure what the picture means because these words were used 3,000 years ago. So that first opening verse that says, cast your bread upon the waters. Here's how the NIV puts it. Ship your grain across the sea. Wow, that's different. Ship your grain across the sea. After many days, you may receive a return. Invest in seven ventures. Yes, maybe even an eight. You don't know what disaster may come upon the land. If the clouds are full of water, they pour rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it still will lie. Whoever watches the wind won't plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the path of the wind, or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let your hands not be idle, for you don't know which one will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all, but let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. You who are young, be happy while you're young. Let your heart give joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into a judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless. That gives a little bit more clarity on some of those passages. Still, some things we don't understand because they come from a Hebrew culture. Let's try to unpack those. I wanted to do that so that you can see whenever you're studying the Bible, whether it's Ecclesiastes or anything, sometimes it's helpful to pick up the NIV and something else, and wherever the wording is really different, you know that the translators had to come up with a way to convey to you in a modern way something very ancient. So let's jump in. The underlying purpose of all these wisdom parables is really what I'm after. And the first two verses are really all about diversification. Don't invest all of your 401k in one stock. That's really what he's saying. They didn't have a stock market then. But in Solomon's day, they did have a big trade of grain with Egypt because Egypt was the big grain producer of the Middle East, and Solomon was instrumental in orchestrating big trading. And he's basically saying, when he says cast your bread on the waters, that's a Hebrew way of saying, I got to send out multiple boats to pick up the grain. And they've got to go by different routes, because if I send only a handful of boats and I send them all by one route, what happens if there's a storm on that route? Then no grain coming back into the kingdom. So I send boats out multiple routes, multiple times, because sooner or later, some of them are going to get through and come back. Cast your bread, cast your wheat, cast your seed on many waters. Diversify. And he's being very practical here. If Solomon had a stock market, he would be using that as an analogy. He doesn't. He's got a grain market. That's the biggest, most important commodity market in Israel at this time. And Solomon says, don't invest in just one place. Make sure you have diversity. How many of you have diversity in your retirement portfolio? How many are you going to go home tonight and say, honey, how do we invest? or hopefully some of you know and you can tell your husband, this is what we learned today. The Bible's filled with practical wisdom. Solomon has a lot of money, so he knows something about this. He's saying diversify. Then he goes on to say, sometimes things just happen. If the clouds are full of rain, if they empty themselves on the earth, if a tree falls to the south or to the north in the place where the tree falls, it will lie. That's a Hebrew way of saying, look, the clouds are up there, the trees are here, sometimes a tree falls, sometimes it rains. Can you control any of that? Is there anyone here who thinks they can control what the weather's going to be like today, tomorrow, or on Christmas? How many of you are hoping for a white Christmas? I hope you're all wrong, because I don't like white Christmases. I like warm ones. Go ahead, boo, it's fine. Which one of us can control it? Nobody. Solomon is saying some things just happen. We can ponder all day long the mystery of that. And it's great that we have the Weather Channel and he didn't, so we do have a little bit of an understanding of what's going to happen over the next couple of days. But I've been caught in way too many airports where the weather guys got it wrong and I got stuck in an airport. So he's saying sometimes things just happen. And if you're trying to control things that you can't control, forget it. Stephen Covey put it this way in his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He said, control the things that you can control. Influence the things that you can influence. The things that are out of your control, stop worrying about. Make sure that you have a summer coat, a fall coat, a spring coat, and a winter coat. How many of you are glad that you now have it on recording that Pastor Glenn just told you to get four coats? That's what Solomon's saying. You can't control that. Then the fourth one is this idea of seize the day. That's the Latin term carpe diem. Many of you saw Dead Poets Society where Robin Williams challenges his poetry class. He says, today's the day, young men. Read this poetry. Get out there and live because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Seize the day. Solomon puts it this way, if he who observes the wind will not sow and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Picture someone sitting there looking at the wind. Oh, look at the wind. I better not go out and sow any seeds today. He who regards the clouds will not reap. Wow, look at those clouds. But I do nothing. I like to watch the wind. I look at the clouds, but nothing gets done. Solomon's saying the clouds are going to keep going. The wind's going to keep blowing. Seize the day. At some point in time, you have to move from pondering to action. At some point in time, you have to make a commitment. In light of the fact that you can't control all of these things, the one thing you can control is you. And even that's hard enough. So seize the day. When opportunity comes along, seize the day. And then verse 5, don't be a know-it-all. As you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones of the womb, he's using a metaphor here of pregnancy. Even with all of our medical knowledge, there's still a wonderful mystery about the essence of life, that this small, tiny, little, microscopic egg and sperm come together and form a life, and then the cells begin to divide, and somehow, roughly 9 months later, that shows up in this little human being, fully animated, fully ready to learn and grow. Solomon's saying there's a lot of stuff about life that you don't know, so stop pretending you're God. Stop being a know-it-all. How many of you know somebody who's a know-it-all? How many of you know somebody in this room who's a know-it-all? Don't point at them. No, stop. Again, very practical. Be careful. Yes, have knowledge. This is a warning. Yes, have wisdom, but wisdom with humility, wisdom with grace. Don't pretend you know what you don't know. Don't be like that because it sounds arrogant. And then verse 6, practice active waiting. In the morning, sow your seed, and at evening, withhold not your hand, for you don't know which will prosper, this or that. Get busy. I can wait. How many of you have ever heard somebody say, I'm going to walk into the deep waters here. How many of you have ever heard somebody say, let go and let God? How many of you have said it? Don't raise your hands. I have said it. There's a small truth in that, but I want to just be really careful. I have people come to me, and somebody came to me just a few weeks ago looking for a job, 9 months in, and they said, you know what, I just have to let go and let God. I said, tell me practically what that means. Are you going to stop sending out your resume? You're going to stop filling out applications? You're going to stop going on interviews? You're going to stop doing research on companies that you might want to work at? What part of your side of the job search are you going to let go of? Well, no, I'm going to keep doing all of those things. Well, what part are you going to let go and let God? Well, I don't know, but it just feels like that's what I need to do because I'm too worried about it. Okay, so maybe you can let go of the outcome because you can't control the outcome, but you can sure control whether you get up in the morning and start pursuing it. And that's what Solomon's saying. Yes, we wait, and yes, we hope in God, but we have an active waiting. I have some friends, some Irish friends, and you know, back in Irish history, they went through some famine, and so they learned to grow potatoes. And they would say, you know what, we're going to depend on God to grow these potatoes, but I'm going to walk out to the field with my hoe in my hand. I got to do some work. I've got to cultivate the ground. So there's a part of this that Solomon is saying, practice an active waiting. If you're just looking at the sky saying, I don't know if I should plant today, great. If you don't plant today, guaranteed you won't have anything to show for it tomorrow. So he's saying, practice an active waiting. And then verses 7 and 8, rejoice now. The light is sweet. It's pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many lives, let him rejoice in them all, but let him remember that in the days of darkness there'll be many. All that comes is vanity. There are going to be some days that are dark in our lives. But quite often what we do is we take a day today that's not necessarily dark, and we invest all that worry about the future darkness in today. Or we reach back in the past and we say, man, that was really terrible last week, and we bring all the pain of the past into today. But today has its own possibilities. And Solomon is really arguing here for be present today. What's available to you today? Is there joy that you can find today? Tomorrow will show up. Is there anybody here who doesn't think tomorrow will bring its own set of worries and cares? So why borrow those into today? What if today you could just say, you know, I'm going to enjoy today. I'm going to enjoy my time in growth groups. I'm going to enjoy my conversation with my friends. I'm going to enjoy studying Solomon. I'm going to enjoy working on my to-do list. I'm just going to enjoy today. Tomorrow will take care of itself, and yesterday is already gone. He's really arguing here for a practical approach to life. Rejoice. Because if today is the day that you can rejoice and calamity does come tomorrow, then you won't have rejoiced when you could. And your soul will be filled with anxiety instead of some leftover joy that you can carry over from the day before. trust me, every one of these, as I'm speaking to you, I'm saying, Glenn, you need to work on that area. So this is not me just, every time I point at you, see, there's these three fingers pointing back at me. And then one of my favorites, oh, to be young. How many of you wrestle with that one? But at what point do you stop being young and look back and say everybody younger than you is young? At what point? I know people in their 20s who are like, man, back in the old days, what? You haven't even been on the earth long enough to have an old day. Come on. And I know some folks who are in their 80s and 90s and look at me and say, man, you're just a young whippersnapper. You're only halfway done. So Solomon is really just saying, rejoice now before it's too late, but while you do have the energy, take whatever energy you have and infuse your life with joy. Use the energy you have, whether it's a 50-year-old energy or an 80-year-old energy or a 20-year-old energy, invest it now because tomorrow you will be one day older than you are today. That's true of everybody in this room. The arrow of time moves one direction. And then verse 11, what place does anxiety have with a life of wisdom, knowing all that we know that God controls things that are mysterious to us? What does anxiety really do for us? I'm not saying that makes it easy to get rid of. It's not like you can just read this verse and it goes away. We've got to do some practical things. But Solomon is really saying, what place can anxiety, what does anxiety do? How does worry actually help? If it helps, go ahead, use it. But if it doesn't help, then it hurts. So all of these very practical things from King Solomon, essentially he sums it all up. He's saying, you know, we're coming to the end of you looking in on my journal. So let me give you some practical outworking of my deeper philosophy, which is that all of us are going to die. And God controls all things, and it's better to live with wisdom under God's care and pursue joy while we can. And now he's giving us these practical working out. So here's a quote from a guy who, especially on the other side of the fact that he died just a few years ago, at a famous commencement address or graduation address he gave to Stanford University, Steve Jobs said this. Steve Jobs, who had dropped out of Stanford, they called him back to do the commencement address. He said, your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. That's a powerful thing coming from Steve Jobs. And he said this when he was wrestling with cancer, and later after it became obvious that he was not going to be able to beat the cancer, someone said, what would you say differently? And he said, the only thing I would do differently is say it with more passion. So Solomon is really, in a Hebrew way, giving us that same advice. There are some things that we cannot know, and only God can. But we can know what's right in front of us. We can know what life God has given to us. So move into it steadily with joy. He's also saying, you know what? There's a lot of stuff that you can't control and I can't control. Call it luck. Call it fate. Call it whatever you want. Figure out where God interacts with it, however you want to do that. But there's just a lot of stuff that I can't control and you can't. Let me show you a clip from a movie that I think gets at that. This is from a kind of cool movie called The Mysterious Case of Benjamin Button, who grows up and then grows backwards. You'll see if you haven't seen it, but this clip gets at that idea of chance.
Sometimes we're on a collision course and we just don't know it. Whether it's by accident or by design, there's not a thing we can do about it. A woman in Paris was on her way to go shopping, but she had forgotten her coat, went back to get it. When she had gotten her coat, the phone had rung, so she had stopped to answer it and talked for a couple of minutes. While the woman was on the phone, Daisy was rehearsing for a performance at the Paris Opera House. And while she was rehearsing, the woman on the phone now had gone outside to get a taxi. Now, a taxi driver had dropped off a fare earlier and had stopped to get a cup of coffee. And all the while, Daisy was rehearsing. And this cab driver, who dropped off the earlier fare and had stopped to get the cup of coffee, had picked up the lady who was going shopping and missed getting the earlier cab. The taxi had to stop for a man crossing the street who had left for work 5 minutes later than he normally did because he forgot to set his alarm. While that man, late for work, was crossing the street, Daisy had finished rehearsing and was taking a shower. And while Daisy was showering, the taxi was waiting outside a boutique for the woman to pick up a package, which hadn't been wrapped yet because the girl who was supposed to wrap it had broken up with her boyfriend the night before and forgot. When the package was wrapped, the woman, who was back in the cab, was blocked by a delivery truck. All the while, Daisy was getting dressed. The delivery truck pulled away and the taxi was able to move, while Daisy, the last to be dressed, waited for one of her friends who had broken a shoelace. While the taxi was stopped, waiting for a traffic light, Daisy and her friend came out the back of the theater. And if only one thing had happened differently, if that shoelace hadn't broken, or that delivery truck had moved moments earlier, or that package had been wrapped and ready because the girl hadn't broken up with her boyfriend, or that man had set his alarm and got up 5 minutes earlier, or that taxi driver hadn't stopped for a cup of coffee, or that woman had remembered her coat and gotten to an earlier cab, Daisy and her friend would have crossed the street, and the taxi would have driven by.
Allô, la réception? Oui, monsieur.
But life being what it is, a series of intersecting lives and incidents, out of anyone's control, that taxi did not go by, and that driver was momentarily distracted, and that taxi hit Daisy. And her leg was crushed.
Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Sometimes the tree falls. Sometimes the clouds drop rain. Sometimes the sun shines. Sometimes darkness comes. And you and I cannot control any of it. What you can control is right now. What will you do with your life right now? How will you pursue whatever's right in front of you right now? How will you embrace whatever gifts, whatever talents, whatever opportunities God has given you right now? Let's take a look quickly at some New Testament wisdom. I'm not going to read all of these. You can write some of these down in your handout. I didn't list any of them this week. I figured by the 11th week, I would ask you, what stories from Jesus' life do you think play a part in how we understand what Solomon had to say? What would Jesus add or subtract to this kind of wisdom that Solomon's giving us? I think Jesus would generally agree, and he would add some things. So in Mark chapter 4, Jesus isn't one who doesn't know where the wind blows, because in Mark chapter 4, Jesus speaks to the wind and it obeys. That's different. In Luke chapter 13, a bunch of people come to him and say, you know, there's a tower that fell. Whose fault was it? How did it happen? Who's in control? And Jesus says, why are you worried about all of that? If it falls on you, what will you face at the judgment? Have you lived a life of sin? Forget about the tower falling, because sooner or later it's going to fall. And it might fall on somebody, you, it might. Jesus says that. John chapter 3, Jesus is interviewing having a conversation with Nicodemus, who's one of the wisest people in all of Israel. Nicodemus can quote you Solomon upside down, backwards, and sideways. And Jesus meets with him and says, you have so much wisdom, but you can't see what's right in front of you. Your heart needs to be transformed. You need to be born from above, because your wisdom has now gotten in the way of true wisdom. You think you're smarter than you are. I'm going to skip Matthew 25 and come back to that. Matthew 5, 1 to 12, that's the Beatitudes. What does Jesus say? In all of these settings, whether you're poor or persecuted, whether you're grieving or not, rejoice. And again, I say rejoice. Blessed are you when they will persecute you for my name's sake. Because you, and then he gives this whole list of things. So at the hardest parts of life, Jesus says, you still can pursue blessedness. Even in the toughest situations. And then Luke chapter 15, where Jesus contrasts young wisdom and old wisdom. There's a young man who goes to his father and says, look, I'm pretty smart. I have wisdom, so give me my inheritance now. And he does something that Solomon's telling him to do. Enjoy your life. But he pushes out too hard, and he enjoys the wrong kinds of things. All the things that Solomon say won't bring happiness, this young person with all of his energy goes out and squanders everything. And you know the story of the prodigal son. He comes back, and the father's waiting. But the older son is angry. So Jesus would really say, young, old, what really counts is spiritual maturity, not age. And you can be young and have spiritual maturity. You can be old and be spiritually immature. And if you're really mature spiritually, you'll follow Jesus Christ and obey what he says and live like he lives. And then Luke chapter 12, where Jesus says, why do you worry? And what does he say? Consider the lilies of the field. Even Solomon in all his glory didn't have what those lilies and those birds have. So why are you worried? Your Father in heaven knows what you need. But I want to come back to Matthew chapter 25. And point you to a story there. This is at the end of Jesus' teaching. And Matthew chapter 25, beginning at verse 14, there's a story that most of you are familiar with. And it's a story of a manager who goes away. He says to his managers, he says, I'll give you $5 million, I'll give you $2 million, and I'll give you $1 million. Invest it while I'm gone. The manager or the owner leaves, he comes back. The guy with the $5 million has invested it. The owner says, wow, great job. Gives him that and more and says, I want you to lead even more of my company and my assets. The one who's been given the middle amount does the same thing. He's gone out and invested it, used all his talents and gifts. And the owner says, good for you. Well done, good and faithful servant. Now give you that back plus even more. Then he goes to the person who he has given the one gift or the $1 million, the one talent to, and he says, so what did you do while I was gone with all that I gave you? And that servant says, well, I knew that you're a hard taskmaster, and I was afraid, so I took your money, and I went out in the backyard, and I dug a hole. Oh, it's a really deep hole. It's a nice hole. You should see the hole that I dug. And I buried it. And here it is. Oh, let me blow the dust off. Here's the same amount that you gave me. And the owner says, I could have put it in the bank and gotten some interest at least. You buried it? And you knew that I would be upset? Well, guess what? I am. So give it back. And I'll give this to the two guys who risked everything. And everything I gave to you, I'm taking away. Now get off the team. That's what Jesus says about seize the day, carpe diem, now's the time. I have given you many gifts. So challenge you to just figure out what is it that God has called you to do and to be. Always take an eternal perspective. That we take an eternal perspective. That means today is not the only day. One day I'll stand before a holy God, and when this life ends, the next life begins. Jesus' values always are subversive. Don't look around to Naperville for the best wisdom. Look to Jesus and then figure out where Naperville's right or where the western suburbs are right. And where it's right, great. Where it's not, get away from it. Practice servant leadership. Everything that God has given you is to serve his wider kingdom. How am I serving? How are you serving? Have a missional mindset that everything about our lives ought to be on the mission of Jesus. That taking everything that you are, every gift, every Christmas present, every Christmas tree light, every post-it note, and asking, how does this help me forward God's kingdom in my life and seek blessedness? Jesus told us to seek blessedness, not hope it comes. He said, pursue it. Go after it. It's just that sometimes we go after blessedness in places where we'll never find it. So we need to think about this idea of blessed lives. So let me just put this back into perspective in my own life, and I share this because my life is the one that I know the most about. First of all, thank you for the M&Ms, but they're not on my diet. So would anybody else, after I said that, nobody's going to take them, of course, right? So back in Easter, I realized, you know, Glenn, you're going to lead these ladies through Thrive, and you're not really thriving. I remember finishing Easter services and being out of breath and being like, oh. And I'd been on a dive trip, and for the first time in my life, I was the first guy up rather than the last guy because I was consuming, well, 312 pounds takes a lot of oxygen. That's what I weighed. So here's the suit jacket that I wore at Easter. Yeah. I suppose I'll have it taken in, but I have another 25 pounds to go. And I tell you that not because I'm such a hero. I'm not. I'm 57 years old, and I'm still fighting my weight. But that's my battle, because there's another side to it that's not just about how I look in a suit coat. It's about, do I have the strength to run hard in ministry? Do I have the mental faculties, or am I always tired? Am I always... There's another side to that that most of you don't know about, and that is that I have struggled with depression several times in my adult life. The truth is that one out of every four men will struggle with depression, and most of them go undiagnosed. And one of the best antidotes to depression is physical fitness and all the stuff that it does to your biochemistry and your body. And so I started on this journey not because I just want to look good in a suit coat. That's nice. But I started on this journey because I have 8 little grandchildren that I don't want to have to tell stories about. Yeah, my grandpa was a really cool guy, but I didn't get to know him. I want to know that the day that I die, I've done everything on my end to be whatever God has asked me to be. I want to be able to teach with integrity and with strength and for the duration, however long God gives me. And that's my story, and I kind of tell it because it's obvious what's happening to me. But there's an inside game, too. And it's about learning wisdom and figuring out how to do this thing called weight loss and fitness. And I've tried to apply wisdom to that. So this morning, I got up and I looked at this picture. That's a picture of me the summer before I came to Good Shepherd. That's me finishing a triathlon. So I then went and registration opened up for that same triathlon, St. Anthony's Triathlon, which is the last Sunday of April this year, and 25 pounds more to go, but I'm going to run that triathlon because I put $160 down this morning to sign up for it. So I got about, yes. Now, you should know that I had to sign up for the Clydesdale division. That's the big guy. Because even when I get down to 225 pounds, I'm still bigger than all the little guys who run around me. But I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it because I want to thrive. And physical aspects of my spirituality are crucial. If my body's out of whack, sooner or later my soul gets out of whack. So that's my story. What's yours? What's so hard for you that you're not jumping in? What part of your thrive journey have you said, no, I don't want to deal with that one. I don't want to deal with that one. Take the first steps. The first steps for me or to get out of my car, drive to Lifetime Fitness, walk in 312 pounds and say, where do I sign up? And I made this commitment. I said, this is going to hurt, but I'm going to go 21 days in a row. Even if some days I just go and I check in and I sit down for 5 minutes and I leave, I'm still going. And 21 days in a row I went. Well, you know what happens after 21 days? I got on the scale and I'd lost 7 pounds. I said, hey, what if I do this 21-day thing over and over again, sooner or later? So a few days ago, I hit 50 pounds. And it's been hard and it's not been easy, but I tell you this because it takes a group, it takes encouragement, my wife, my family. So where do you need to jump in? Where is God asking you to step out and thrive? Is it in your relationship life? Is it in your marriage? Is it in a friendship where you need to bring some forgiveness and it's just been really hard? Is it in working with your kids and it's been frustrating? Is it some new project that you've wanted to do for a long time, but, is it a small group that you've wanted to join, but, I don't know if I can do it? What thing is in the way between you and the life that God has for you? That's the thing that I hope God helps you walk through this season of Advent and this season of Christmas. Let's pray. Lord God Almighty, thank you for this day. Thank you for these wonderful sisters who support each other and who care for one another, who are passionate about knowing what you have to say in your word, who want to follow Jesus. Lord, teach each of us. Each of us has a journey, a decision, a choice, a thing that we need to step into to thrive. Teach us to take care of ourselves. Teach us to share with joy the burdens and sorrows with each other so that we're supporting each other on this journey of joy and thriving. And thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ, who came with all of his fullness and said that if we would follow him, he would give us a full life. I thank you for that in Jesus' mighty name. Amen. Thanks, sisters.